Talk Show. Recorded live.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Now, where's McGuinness?
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Axel's going to do all right.
Against a B-7?
It's a starter B-7. Don't even have the kinks worked out yet, a starter B-7.
Oh, battling Maxo. One round Maxo to battling Steam.
Will you shut up? What are you always knocking him for? He's been doing all right for 5 years. He'll keep doing okay. Okay, so he needs a little work, a little oil paste. We get to $500, we're getting that stuff. New trigger spring, oil paste, eye lens, everything. Yeah, you're gonna do okay, boy. You're gonna do okay.
Nope.
Oh, he's almost the world's heavyweight champion once. I used to be a heavyweight myself. Before the law was passed, of course. Yeah, I used to box under the name of Steel Kelly. Yeah, they kind of call me that because I never got knocked down. Not once. Well, going to be a great fight tonight, huh? Hey, you know, my boy here, he took Dimsey the Rock back in 71. You remember that?
Nope.
Well, it's all over the East Coast newspapers, you know. Boston, New York, Philly. Well, that's where we're from, Philly.
We went to the youth club and we looked out of place. I didn't know where to look, so I looked at your face. But you were a boxing champ and I was a weakling. You didn't give me a chance, you gave me a beating.
If they don't watch the fights.
What?
If Nolan and Maxwell don't watch the bouts.
What are you are you crazy? You out of your mind? You can't do that.
We deliver a fight or we don't get paid.
Come on, Steele. They'll never let you. You can't make them believe that. Listen, you can't do it.
Nobody knows what Maxwell looks like. Only those two guys in the office saw me. And if Nolan and Maxwell don't watch the bouts, well, why should the crowd know?
Steal!
I remember I used to serve drinks at this local joint, cause I was broke, but my focal point was this wasn't no regular bar. It was a spot where robots were ready to spar. And one night, Megatron rolled in. He ordered Pennzoil, drank it straight from a can. His plan was to go and get wasted again, standing next to Mega Man with a drink in his hand.
Can you get up? Steel, can you get up?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, hold it now. Hold it!
The robe.
What?
Get the robe.
Hold it now, that's all right. That's enough now. Ladies and gentlemen, the winner in 2 minutes and 20 seconds of the first round, the Maynard Flash. Go!
Pile of junk! Get out of here!
In the clearing stands a boxer and a fighter by his trade, and he carries the reminders of every glove that laid him down or cut him till he cried out in his anger and his shame. I am leaving, I am leaving, but the fighter still remains.
Open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Oh, howdy, everybody. Yes, it's Talking Twilight Zone, and we are on the cusp here of St. Patrick's Day. So happy St. Patty's Day to everybody. And
happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everyone. Happy St. Patrick's Day, yes. And they're always trying to get me lucky charms. Oh, yes, it's St. Patty's Day. Couple days.
Well, you know what the important question is today about what men wear? Do they wear briefs or do they wear boxers?
What do they wear under their kilt? That's right.
Oh, kind of vary, I think.
Yeah, we had a parade here in Conshohocken. That's where I live, Conshohocken, Pennsylvania. And they had a parade here, and they had people walking down the street, men walking down the street, and kilts with their bagpipes, and do they wear anything under those kilts? Oh, not that I care. Well, maybe I do, but come on, they're walking down the street with them. But I hate bagpipes. That's the thing, I hate bagpipes. Happy St. Patty's Day to everybody, and some of us are drinking and we're having a good time and making Murray. So yes, guest 7 years. Happy Lucky Charms Day to you too. Yes, happy Lucky Charms. And we have
Watch out for those evil leprechauns.
It's not nice to steal gold coins from a leprechaun. Bad shop owner. Bad shop owner.
Always up to me, Lucky Charms. And we have Felix. Hey, Felix. I'm so glad, Felix.
I'm back. Sorry, I disappeared on you. My dinner came.
Well, Rick,
ooh, sounds good.
I'm just glad you're back. That's all I care about, you and Daphne. Rick and Daphne are here. And Dave, my co-host, and Robert, my co-host, and Bobby, my co-host, we're all here. So we're here because we're here because we're here, yes. That's wonderful. And
here we come, walking down the street.
That's
the prettiest thing that you've ever seen.
Hey, we're the monkeys.
Hey, we're the monkeys.
So, here we go. All right, okay. Enough of our levity and jocularity. We are going to be talking about the episode Steel. It is what, the second or the third, or what episode is this in season 5?
Second.
I forget.
It was, second. Yeah.
Second.
Second?
I said
second.
That 3 times, the second.
Oh, right. I'm sorry. Sorry. Don't beat me. Oh, no, he's beating me. It's the second episode in season 5. All right. So I'm going to turn it over to Robert. While Bobby beats me, I'm going to turn it over to Robert for the opening clip.
Okay. And let's start the party off with a little music going into our clip.
Mr. Serling.
Sports item. Circa 1974. Battling Maxo, B2, heavyweight, accompanied by his manager and handler, arrives in Maynard, Kansas, for a scheduled 6-round bout. Battling Maxo is a robot, or to be exact, an android. Definition, an automaton resembling a human being. Only these automatons have been permitted in the ring since prize fighting was legally abolished in 1968. This is the story of that scheduled six-round bout. More specifically, the story of two men shortly to face that remorseless truth that no law can be passed which will abolish cruelty or desperate need, nor for that matter, blind animal courage. Location for the facing of said truth: a small smoke-filled arena just this side of the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. See, this is in the future, where boxing between human fighters has been criminalized. You know, the sport is now dominated by fighting robots. So former boxer Steel Kelly, and he's played by Lee Marvin, he manages a B-2 model robot named the Battling Maxo. The Maxo is an older model, and it's no longer in demand. So Kelly and his partner, Paul, have used the last of their money to get to the fight venue. And they're being given this chance because one of the scheduled fighters was damaged in transport. So Kelly has to assure the fight promoter that Maxo will be able to fight. So after the fight promoter leaves, Kelly and Paul, they argue about Maxo's fitness to fight. And Kelly feels that Maxo should be able to go through with the fight despite its age and condition. And then Paul tests Maxo's functions and an arm spring fails. And they don't have the parts or the money to fix them. So then Kelly decides that he's going to disguise himself as Maxo in order to collect the money necessary for the repairs. So despite the valiant effort, he's unable to damage the B-7 robot that he's fighting. Even when he lands an unblocked punch directly in the back of his head, he's nearly killed, but manages to last a little under 3 minutes. The crowd jeers and boos at Maxo's performance, not knowing that it's a human doing the fighting. I don't know how they didn't know. But afterwards, the fight promoter will only give them half the prize money because of Maxo's poor performance. Kelly doesn't protest. He needs the money. And, you know, the promoter will recognize him as Maxo and renege entirely if he does protest. So Kelly is bruised, but he's stubborn as ever and tells Paul they'll use the money to get the parts to fix Maxo. Oh, my goodness. The guy doesn't give up. Well, you know, you have to remember, does anyone remember that 1960s kitty game called Rock'em Sock'em Robots? This episode was the life-size version of that game, except the game was better and a lot more interesting. I didn't like this episode at all. I didn't like Steel. I found the whole story ridiculous and poorly executed. I thought the acting was decent, but the idea of Steel Kelly pretending to be Maxo the robot in the ring was plain silly. How could the crowd not see that he wasn't a robot? He was sweating. He was grimacing. He was opening his mouth. He was even talking to the pole. It just made no sense that he got away with this. I mean, suspension of disbelief is one thing, but this was just lunacy. And Paul warned him not to do it, but he wouldn't listen, and he nearly got killed. I can't imagine people carting these robots from venue to venue. They're probably pretty heavy, wouldn't you think? So what happens when your bot breaks down in the middle of a fight? I don't know. I mean, I had to laugh when Steele told Mr. Nolan that he was Maxo's manager as if he was talking about a real person. Owner? Yes. Manager? No. It's very silly. It's a robot. He's not a person. I mean, come on. So, you know, I'd also like to know why and how humans would be banned from boxing, which is one of the most popular spectator sports in the world. Why not ban humans from wrestling instead? So that's fake anyway. Just the fact that people would pay to see two machines box, that completely boggles my mind. It's just a stupid episode. I like Lee Marvin. I always liked him. I thought he was a great actor, but he was too good for something that's lame. And, by the way, just to mention one thing, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, that game, it's actually being sold again after 35 years. Had not been sold since 1978. came out on the market in 1965. Yeah, you know that, right?
I got one at home. I just got to put it together is the only thing.
Yep. It was sold on the market in 1965, a year after Steel aired. So maybe the creator sold this episode and sold the idea for the game. But, you know, I thought that game was cool. I'd rather play that game than watch this episode. But, yeah, after all these years, it's back on the market. So, Felix, what do you Foxy still hasn't been out long. You're right, Felix. Yeah. So, anyway...
Oh, it's amazing how these writers didn't have the foresight to go further into time instead of thinking that a lot of things are going to disappear before 2000. You know,
absolutely.
How everything's set either in the 70s or 80s or 90s.
Yeah, absolutely.
It seems like.
They couldn't have had them arriving on a bus then, could they?
It'd be a flying car or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Robert, it's your turn.
Oh, it's mine? Well, what about your rating?
Oh,
what was your rating?
Oh, my rating's a zero. I hate this episode. Mm-hmm. I hate it. Absolutely hate it.
Well, for myself, when we did the reviews, I guess I was the only optimistic one out of everybody that seemed to have reviewed it. I don't know if I had anybody agree with my rating or not. I think I did, maybe one or two.
What did you rate it?
Well, I give it a little better rating, and it kind of put me on the forefront of the reviews when we were doing them. I had a 3 out of 5. So,
oh, really? Okay.
I give it a little better. I think reason why my rating was so high was just because of what we get in the future from this episode. You think, as I mentioned in the past, and I'll always keep mentioning that Twilight Zone is the root of all shows that are out there now. And this is kind of the forebearer of the Terminator type movies where we get the Skynet and kill robots and all that stuff in the future. So this is no by means a classic. It's not, definitely, because it is slow in places, and you know, there's this some things that are kind of throws you off, like, for example, it's hard to believe this would be 1971 or 74 or whatever, and you know, we're still doing buses. We still have, it's not like a Dark City setup with this story, but still, if you had a top 15 to top 20 best of Twilight Zone episodes or stories, I imagine Steel would be somewhere in those top ones. And I know that's hard to believe, but hey, I give the Passabuyer, what was it, about 4 or 5 out of 5, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody's taste is different on these episodes as well. I mean, you know, I give 2 very high rating as well. And I remember mostly from Westerns and war movies. And also this brings up, you know, the question with Lee Marvin, which was better, this or The Grave in
The
Network?
The Grave. The Grave, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, that's because at the natural setting, I think war movies and Westerns always been for Lee Marvin, and I could see that. It's very much, you know, the bonding between a man and animal situation. I mean, you know, we kind of build our bonds with animals like dogs and cats, and Steel kind of built a bond for his B2 obsolete robot. But the problem is that there are far more advanced robots, and even Paul, his engineer, mentioned, well, you know, we could put the money down on a B5, which would be a more better investment. And one thing, when you go into business, you got to understand not to get attached to things. And the problem with Lee Marvin's character, he got too attached to the robot, to where, you know, it's like, let me give you an example of cars today. Now, some cars, and if cars go out of circulation, the company that makes the car still have to have parts for that car for at least 10 years. And then after that, the parts disappear. Like the Saturns, they don't make the Saturns anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Cars like that, they have to at least have 10 years of parts. Okay, now with the B2, you don't know when the parts ran out for this particular robot. And he was trying to tell them, look, you know, we can't get this. They don't make this stuff anymore. But the whole situation was he just couldn't part with the robot. He grew a bonding or attachment, you know, to the robot. He refused to face the fact that his robot fighter was obsolete. And, you know, he was willing to get into the ring and fight for him to bring back the glory days that were long gone for Steel.
That's true, yeah.
But, you know, Steel was lucky he wasn't caught in Rouge, because he mentioned that, you know, the ones that were promoting the fights and stuff like that really didn't care about him enough to come out and watch him. Their concern was to count the money and put things together behind the scenes. They didn't really care about the fight itself. And he should feel very lucky going that he didn't get caught. I mean, you know, human sweat at, you know, showed that people were into the moment. They weren't actually paying attention to the fighter. You could tell the difference between a robot and a human.
Exactly.
And you know, at the end, you're going to fail because, you know, a robot never wears down. As in the Terminator movie, John Carter, future father, says that they're relentless. They don't give up. They keep going after you. And, you know, it's the same with that robot. It get tired. It was never get wore down. It was just going to keep hitting and hitting and hitting until you were finally done. And that's what happened. You know, 2 minutes with a robot, and that was it for him. So, you know, the repairman, he also built a bond with Steel, which is his downfall as well. Left him a long time ago and went with somebody else instead of sticking around with Steel. So, you know, he's bitch and complain and everything else about, you know, the robot needs this and that, fix him anymore and all that stuff. But why are you still there? Why are you still helping? Why aren't you gone? Take the next bus home, you know? And even at the end, he still talks about, well, you know, we got half back, but then we're going to invest more stuff into this robot that's not going to go nowhere again. So, I mean, it's just a vicious, endless cycle, very much like the Big Tall Wish with the emo boxer in that one. He had one sight. He wouldn't believe in the miracle that the kid, you know, gave him to be a winner, and he ended up being a loser. And it's the same thing with Steel. He didn't have the foresight to see the future. He stayed in the past. Sometimes we're accused of staying in the past instead of going in the future, and we get into the situations we're in now. So, no one to blame but himself. But one thing to mention about this episode, and as I mentioned, this kind of is the forefather for Battlestar Galactica and Terminator and all the Man Against Machine type movies and TV series out there. There was a movie called Real Steel that came out in 2011. The director of the movie talked about the writer, and he remembers the episode from Twilight Zone and talked about the idea of they making a movie from this. But the only thing with Real Steel, though, is it's more of a father-son bonding in this one, because evidently him, Hugh Jackman character, being a boxer and being away from his family and really put a strain in trying to, you know, unite and get back together since, you know, they're people lost interest in fighting and were into robot fighting. But I got a 2-minute clip here. We'll let Hugh Jackman explain it to everybody.
2020, and roboboxing is the biggest sport in the world.
That was awesome.
Corporate-sponsored, big money, rules, regulations, but beyond that is the underworld.
Give me the main event.
Fight till the death!
I just need a little loan.
As much as I like you, dude, you're a bad bet, brother.
What was he like? As a boxer? As anything?
Charlie is someone who was a boxer. Boxing's no longer relevant. People aren't interested in it anymore. Robot boxing is a game, and he's trying to eke out a living.
You're finally done, because you got nothing left. What are we looking for?
Anything I could use to put a fighting bot together.
I think there's a whole robot in there.
Max finds Adam in this junkyard, and he believes that there's something to this robot.
I've never seen anything like it before. When we bring him to life, it's probably the most important moment in the entire film. Adam becomes the glue that brings us all together.
Get him a fight.
The robots are operated by humans. They have remote controls, control panels, high-tech devices. Adam's big-time function is the shadow function, and his operating system is programmed to mirror what he sees.
Watch me do what I do.
We did motion capture, where we had real boxers, choreographed by Sugar Ray Leonard, actually boxing each other.
Sean said to me, he goes, how do you feel about Sugar Ray Leonard? And I was like, sure, why don't we just go for the best?
The emotion takes over in this thing, and all of a sudden these machines, like, they come to life, and you start talking to them like they're real. Show them some power. And that's what the audience are going to feel, too.
I'm ready to fight.
And that is my rating, 3 out of 5. I very much, even rewatching this for the clips last night, I watched the whole thing. I didn't fast forward. I didn't skip over it. I did enjoy this episode. Bobby.
All right, thanks. Well, it won't be surprising to anybody here that I have no use for this episode at all. I think it's dark and dismal and depressing and completely unnecessary. It's especially hard to watch when you consider that, although it wasn't written by Rod Serling, thank God, that Rod Serling wrote one of the greatest boxing stories of all time, and that's Requiem for a Heavyweight. So he shouldn't even have his name anywhere even near this because it's almost a joke. So I don't really have anything to say about it at all. I watched it again yesterday for the first time in decades, and it was the longest 22 minutes of my life. Rather than discuss that the episode at all, I'd rather discuss Lee Marvin, because if the episode was anything even close to as interesting as Lee Marvin's life was, we'd really have something to talk about. I did a lot of research on him and found out a lot of things that I did not know about him. Now, along with many other people, he was really one of my favorite actors back in the day, and that dates all the way back to the 50s when he was in a crime series, an early TV called M Squad, and that was a favorite series of my mother's, and she allowed me to stay up and watch it with her. Of course, he did many, many things after that, but what's really interesting about him is although he was very famous and was in a lot of big-time movies, he also made some dreadful choices in his life. He turned down an astonishing number of successful movies. He was Steven Spielberg's first choice to play Quint in Jaws. He turned it down. He was the first choice to play General Patton in Patton. He turned that down. And, of course, that went to George C. Scott. And he also turned down many other movies that he was given a chance to be in, including The French Connection.
And they were all blockbusters.
And Dirty Harry and Death Wish.
And they were all blockbusters.
Yes, he was offered parts in all of them. He turned every one of them down. So he wasn't one to make very good choices. He really didn't understand what was going on. But in spite of that, he had a very good career. He died very young. He died in 1987. He was only 63. He had been in the hospital because he was run down, and they thought he had the flu. And he was in there for 2 weeks, and they did tests on him and found nothing, so they sent him home, and he promptly had a heart attack and died. So it's just a shame because it had been now, with so much different things going on in medicine, he probably could have saved his life and told him that he was in serious trouble. Actually, he's a famous movie tough guy, but according to everything I've read, he really wasn't all that tough in person. He was a war hero. He was in World War II. He was wounded, and he got the Purple Heart while he was there. He was in very famous battles, one of which in which most of the men with him were killed, and he survived. He was, like I said, he was wounded, and he was very brave. But the funny part about it is that being in battles in World War II, he became very much anti-war. Now, my favorite Lee Marvin movie is The Dirty Dozen, and without a doubt, it's one of my all-time favorite films. He hated it. He told people he did it only for the money. He absolutely despised the story. He did it simply for the money, and he said he despised it because it was so unrealistic. It was nothing like war really was. Now, of course, anybody would have a brain knew that it was ridiculous. But, I mean, it was only fiction, so I think he took it a little too seriously. He admitted that he simply did it for the money. He served as a Marine in the Pacific. He took part in the invasion of 21 islands and was wounded and nearly died as a result. He was a sniper and would be sent in during the night in a small rubber boat prior to the rest of his platoon. His wartime experiences deeply affected him for the rest of his life, to the degree that he became an incredible pacifist. He was very much anti-war, and during the Vietnam War, he campaigned for people like George McGovern because he thought war was absolutely dreadful, even though he was a war hero. So he had a fascinating life, but it really is quite shy. Of course, for anybody who remembers, he was involved in the 70s in a very famous, for its time, actually the first palimony case with that woman, Michelle Triola. And although he lost that case to her, he appealed it, and he won, so she never got a dime, never got a thing, because he won it on appeal. Quite amazing. He retired in 75. He moved to Tucson, and it's fascinating. I mean, I wish that episode was as interesting as his life is. There's a lot of websites devoted to him, much to my surprise, including pictures of his gravesite. And here's the best part about it. Here's why the great irony of this is, that because he was a war veteran, he is buried in Arlington National Cemetery. But what makes that most interesting is, given the story we just discussed, he happens to be buried next to a real-life boxer, Joe Louis. He's buried right next to him. Wow. So he eventually, in death, got to be the boxer that he tried to be in this episode. I find that incredibly ironic. But
well, wasn't also true about Lee Marvin being an alcoholic, so he had problems with
alcohol. Well, I don't go into that. Yes, he did have alcohol problems. That is quite true. And yeah, he had a lot of problems in his life. But, he's the only one to have done that. Like I said, I don't have any use for this story. I just think it's just awful. At this point in the series, when there's no budget to do any special effects, you don't want to do a boxing movie. I mean, you know, Requiem for Heavyweight was back in the 50s. And my other favorite boxing movie, I know everybody picks Rocky, but my other one is Raging Bull, and that was in the 80s.
De Niro was great in that, definitely.
Oh, absolutely. And so, yeah. I mean, this just, when you watch this today, and even if you keep in mind that it's so long ago when it's a TV series, you know, I wish that Twilight Zone stopped trying to do stories that he just didn't have the money to do. He didn't have money to create a boxing ring with a lot of people around, you know, and make it look realistic. So there's no point in doing that.
Well, he had to be futuristic, and he just, like you said, didn't have the budget. I mean, he could only go as far as 1974.
Right.
I mean, you know, he was limited, and that's unfortunate.
Now, like Lynn, I gave it a zero, naturally. But I did want to read a couple of lines from – I went to the Internet Movie Database, where, as always, everything that we don't like, they love over there. They gave it 7.5 out of 10. But there are two reviews over there, one of them just written last year, that are completely different. It shows you how people can look at the same thing and be have such different opinions. Because one person writes, and this is them writing, not me, says, it's not the very best episode of The Twilight Zone. Richard Matheson of Steel is certainly one of the top five and one of the greatest short stories ever written. My God. I mean, Robert gives it a three, but he doesn't go that far.
That's
immediately followed by a review, like I said, just written a few months ago. No, I'm sorry, that was written a few months ago. This is from 2010, in which the writer says, to me, this episode is an enormous waste of talent. After all, Lee Marvin was an exceptional actor and had a real presence about him. But here he stars in a substandard episode, one that probably shouldn't have been made in the first place. The episode is supposed to take place in the 1970s, a decade after boxing has been outlawed. There is no irony, no suspense, just Marvin getting the crap kicked out of him in this silly and impossible to believe, even for the Twilight Zone, story. Plus, despite Marvin's magnetic presence, this is one that is imminently worth skipping. Dull and ridiculous, despite the good acting. And I have to agree with all of that. I just think that it's just a shame. I mean, I went back and looked at our reviews of The Grave, and I think I gave it a 1.5 or something. So, I mean, you know, you're going to get an actor like Lee Marvin. Give him something to do. This story has nothing because you know damn well that he's not going to survive. And so there's nothing to wait for. You know exactly where it's going, and there's nothing going on except for the last 2.5 minutes of the story. So it gets, I'm on the inside with this. I'm afraid it's a zero from me. If it had been as interesting as Lee Marvin was, I would have enjoyed it a lot more. Lynn?
All right, Dave.
Yeah, I think those are all valid comments. I actually quite enjoyed watching it, but it was certainly not well written. There was a lot of repetition. It was basically a, you know, one-page story. Lee Marvin being on it obviously added to the, you know, raised it a little bit beyond that. But having said that, I quite liked it. I suppose the argument for the budget was, well, they were playing somebody who had a rundown machine anyway, so that actually played into the strengths of the fact that they couldn't have funded anything better. A few comments. I mean, this was supposedly a B2 machine, and it was going to fight a B7. They made some comment somewhere along the line that the B9 was about to come out. They did make a comment that nobody here in this particular, you know, offbeat city had seen a B2 for a few years, and so they wouldn't know that it didn't have different abilities. Maybe it wasn't a good boxer, but maybe they'd spent time making it more realistic. And in other words, it bruised. I think he actually mentioned in the dialogue that, tell them that this model used to bruise and sweat. Didn't fight very well, but it bruised and sweat. So that was good. But, I mean, I was put off at the beginning when I saw him arriving on a bus. I thought, well, this doesn't really look very futuristic. obviously, the episode, by the way, Series 5, Episode 2, as it was of that, but Episode 122 in the whole overall series, 4th of October 1963, but set in August 74. It's very difficult. The chap who played Pole, of course, was in Nervous Man in a $4 Room, I think, Series 2, Episode 39. But I must admit, Lee Marvin was watchable. I found that all the way through it, I was just watching Lee Marvin. To that extent, I quite enjoyed it. Would they have had, though? I mean, if they'd had these rules, and I think, by the way, the reason why he's so desperate and he forms this sort of affinity with the old model, he didn't want to let it go, apart from the fact they can't afford a new one, is the fact that he mentions that he was a boxer, he'd been made redundant. He almost, even though this was an object, not a real thing, a real person, he still identified with it, and he didn't want that to be made obsolete. But I would have thought if they had any sort of rules, I mean, with humans now, we don't have a light heavyweight fighting a heavyweight, do we? We don't have a bantamweight fighting a featherweight. So you would have thought that B2s could only fight other B2s, B7s could only fight other B7s. You think they'd have some sort of level playing field. I think some people watching it when it first went out may well have hoped against hope. I mean, it's a little bit of... triumph of futility and desperation, but still hoping that there may be an outcome. So perhaps people watching it when it first aired were thinking, well, perhaps he might win. Perhaps, you know, a miracle will happen. But I'm glad that the writers didn't go that way. That would have made it even more corny if he'd end up fighting. You know, if you have something where that the other robot threw a spring or something and then he knocked it out when it was static or something, that would have spoiled it. Because the whole point was that these two guys, you know, their time had come and gone. They were fighting the inevitable. And they were always going to lose. So it was a very simple story, a very short story, and it was just given a little bit of viewability by Lee Marvin. I'm still not sure what rating to give it. The story, I think, is it Felix that put in? The story's really only worth a 2, but I'm prepared also to add an extra point for Lee Marvin being in it, even though he was probably and woefully underused. I was only just watching him a couple of nights ago in the UK when they were airing for... Oh, how many times, I don't know, but Bad Day at Black Rock, which is...
Oh, I love that movie. Oh, yeah. I love that movie with Spencer Tracy.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
and
Bad
then
Day at Black
Rock. And, yeah, so,
that's
yeah.
One of the best movies ever. Oh, God, I love that.
Yeah, so I can't really defend the story, but I quite enjoyed watching it. I quite enjoyed watching Lee Marvin, because we don't actually, as far as I know, he wasn't in many TV series, was he? I mean, I suppose he made a few guest roles, but he was mainly a film actor, transitioned to acting. I'm having a look at the wiki page of him, but really seems to be more a movie actor. But I'm surprised that Bobby said he turned down so many of those roles. Maybe he didn't feel as though his own acting, perhaps he didn't believe in himself as an actor. Maybe
yeah,
he didn't think he could carry those parts.
I was thinking that too. He didn't have confidence in himself because those were blockbuster roles.
I could see him as Patton, certainly. Absolutely. I think that would have done. So I won't extend it anymore. A weak story made watchable by Lee Marvin. Just scraping a 3.
What will we do with the drunken sailor? What will we do with the drunken sailor? What will we do with the drunken sailor early in the morning? Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises early in the morning.
Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor. Shave his belly with a rusty razor early in the morning.
Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey, and up she rises. Way, hey.
Till he's sober, put him in a longboat till he's sober, early in the morning.
Way, hey, and up she rises, way, hey, and up she rises, way, hey, and up she rises, early in the morning.
And Rick?
Yes.
Yes. What did you think?
I'm probably going to be beaten down and yelled at as usual. What a decent episode. Okay, not great. No, was it a say Monsters Are Due on Maple Street? No.
No. No.
Okay. That having been said, this to me had heart. Okay. The guy knew he was going to lose, but he tried anyway. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Like Robert, Bobby, yeah, Robert said, you know, Rocky, okay? Rocky was a third-rate fighter going against the number one contender, or actually the champion. He didn't have a chance either. And he actually knew that he was probably going to have his head handed to him, even though he trained as hard as he did and whatnot. But deep in his heart, he knew he was going to get his head handed to him, you know, and, you know, so he tried. And, of course, in Rocky, he won. Also, though, Robert, what about the other robots from the 30s? Like the robots that would appear in Buck Rogers?
Or Metropolis.
Flash Gordon, yeah, from the 20s. Mm-hmm. Even before that. There is a play called Ronson's Useful Robots, written by Chekhov in the 1800s, I believe the late 1800s. That was the first time a robot was used. It's better known as RUR, by the way. I just threw myself off track here.
Well, time for a drink.
Here we go.
Too late.
Oh, my God.
Anyway.
Oh, my God.
Let me ask you, Rick. So which did you like him better in? Did you like him better in The Grave? Do you think that was a natural fit story-wise for him, or did you like him better in this one?
I thought he was perfect in The Grave.
I like both, to tell you the truth. I like both.
I thought The Grave was the more natural episode for him.
Maybe. Maybe he liked it better. Maybe he did do a little bit of a better job.
More Western. It was more Western. He was more of a Western.
Yeah. I'd give it a 3.5.
Give it a 3?
0.5.
Oh, okay. What, a 3.5?
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, 3.5. Okay. All right.
Better than me. See? So he liked it a little bit better.
Yeah,
he liked
it too. All right. That's awesome. Okay. What? Oh, my God. I forgot. Felix. What did Felix?
You give it a 3.
Oh, no. He gave it a 3. And Ron gives it a 2.5. All right, Ron. Yeah, there have been far worse. Absolutely, there have been far worse. So, yeah, Ron gets a 2.5. Okay, cool. So, we've got all of our ratings. And, oh, Louie didn't make it tonight. Oh, gosh. Well, he might not be able to. He has kids. He
probably had family functions or things going on. So
yeah. He'll probably be here next show. All right. Oh, next show. Yes, indeedy. Well, okay, we got all our ratings for this show. Let's talk about the next show. That will be on...
29th,
right? That will be on March 29th, Saturday, March 29th. And that will be Nightmare at 20,000 Feet. Awesome,
well,
awesome, awesome.
I
glad.
Think we know how we're going to predict that one.
Oh, awesome, 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 classic. Yes, we've got that going. We got that in 2 weeks. I can't wait. It's like just, this is something I'm really looking forward to.
And the last appearance of William Shatner, too. So.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, he was in what? He was in
Nick of Time.
Nick of Time.
And another one, I think. Or was it two or three?
I think it was just these two. Yeah, well, this is like, ooh. Okay. Yeah, so I'm looking forward to this. So this is going to be something I am very much looking forward to. So,
and one thing we can discuss on the next show, too, is what we think about John Lithgow compared to William Shatner.
Yes. Yeah, from the movie version. Absolutely, yeah. Oh, yeah, because I like the Twilight Zone movie. I really do. I just like it. So anyway... we're going to talk about that. And I do want to, at this point, wish everybody, since today is the 15th, 2 days from now, will be...
Everybody, raise your glasses.
Raise your glasses.
Happy St. Patty's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patty's Day to everyone.
Happy New Year. Oh, we're all...
Yeah. That's going to be Lucky Charms. That's going to be Lucky Charms. Yes. Oh.
And everybody pull out your Leprechaun movies, all 4 or 5 of them. Kind of lose count after a while.
It's not like you go find from a Leprechaun. Bad shop owner. Bad shop owner.
Absolutely. So, Erin Gobra and everything else, this all that good stuff. And I wish everybody a happy St. Patty's. And we will see you all, hopefully, on the 29th for one of the all-time classic Twilight Zone episodes. So I want to say goodbye to everybody.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Say
bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
I'm goodbye, sorry. Everybody.
Well, everyone says goodbye. I'm not leaving. Everyone has to say goodbye.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
All
bye,
right.
Bye, Gracie.
Good night, Gracie.
Hey, got a better order for the singers here.
Thank you.
I've been a wild rover for many a year, and I've spent all my money on whiskey and beer. But now I'm returning with gold in great store, and I swear I will play the wild rover no more. And it's no nay, never. No nay, never, no more will I play the wild rover. No, never, no more. I went into an alehouse that I used to frequent, and I told the landlady me money was spent. I asked her for credit, but she answered me nay. Such a custom as yours I can get any day. And it's no nay, never. No nay, never, no more will I play the wild rover. No, never, no more. Then I took from my pocket a handful of gold, and on the round table it glittered and rolled. Well, the landlady smiled as she served me the best. What I told you before, sure, it was only in jest. And it's no name, never. No name, never, no more will I play the wild rover. No, never, no more.
Say one thing. Yo, Adrian! I did it!